Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. I'm here with Sarah Cowart, an academic athletic advisor and the owner of Sideline Confessions. I'm so excited to just have an awesome conversation with you today about the work you do and about student athletes. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is a fun, exciting thing just to sit and chat about our student athletes.
For sure. Yeah. So let's just start there, I think, with telling us a little bit about your business and the type of people that you help serve.
Yeah. So I founded Sideline Confessions back in October of 2019. And it came after a long career in college athletics in the academic department. So I saw student athletes, you know, come through recruiting visits. And the number one thing I always heard was from both students and parents, how overwhelmed and frustrating that was the college recruiting process. They really didn't know what to do. They didn't know who to talk to. And it really boiled down to not understanding all the academic requirements to being a division, especially a Division I athlete. So that was really how this whole thing started. It was a way for me to help parents and students really provide them with the tools and resources they need to be successful at the next level.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to be completely honest. You know, I was a collegiate athlete, and there was some recruiting involved, but I was not a scholarship athlete. I was, you know, I guess I would say walk on, but not really. Like, I was recruited, but, you know, anyways, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's really going to vary based on like what school you're being recruited to, for what sport. And for me, it was a very easy process just because it was kind of like I put academics first of where do I want to go to school for the degree I want. And then, oh, great, I can also do track. And it was like kind of a simple process for me personally, but that is not the case for most. You know, I did work in athletics or still do, but at the collegiate level for quite some time. And it is a very complicated process. And like I said, some of these big universities too that are spending lots of money on scholarship money, it's a big deal. And can you just verify for me, like, does it vary between sports too, what different guidelines or rules, regulations are and stuff like that?
Yeah. So it actually will vary between like division levels. So from like Division I to Division II, there's different requirements, and then all the way down to like the junior college level. So each one, whether it's NAIA, Division III, there's all these different requirements. So I always tell students, aim for the academic requirements at the Division I institution level, because then you're going to hit all the other ones. And that way you kind of leave all the doors open of what that's going to look like through your recruiting journey, whether it starts like your sophomore year or whether it doesn't start until your senior year.
What are some of those requirements, if you can? Like what's an example of like a requirement you have to hit?
Yeah. Oh gosh, there's so many requirements that you have to hit to be academically eligible. One of them in particular is the GPA requirement. And so like when you think about it, moving into that direction, the GPA requirement is, you always hear this phrase, a 2.3 or take a knee. And so, but the thing about it is that GPA actually comes from core courses. And when we think about core courses, they're going to be your math, your sciences, your Englishes. Like those are the things that are going to fall in those categories. And not every course students take at the high school level fall underneath a core course requirement.
So you could think that your GPA is okay, but once you narrow down like your GPA based on certain classes, it might be something slightly different.
Yes, yes. And that is something that I've encountered with parents a lot. Well, they'll look at their student's report card and say, well, my student's a, you know, a 3.0 kid. And then we look and say, well, you know, they got all C's in English. And but that all their A's came from, you know, physical education classes, or even like, you know, there's certain type of classes now with like computer classes or financial like literacy classes. Most of the time, none of those count.
Oh, wow. Which is like not fair though. That's like, right. Like you're, yeah. If you're smart in computer sciences, you're smart in computer sciences. What if that's what you want to major in, you know, like.
Yeah. And that's like, that's where the conversations I have with a lot of students and with a lot of parents is saying, okay, we want to think of a really big picture. What does this look like? Because too, that's going to help these students as they're getting these offers from different institutions of, is it, you know, is that an institution I really need to be going to? Will I be successful athletically and academically? Because again, we want, like, not all student athletes are going pro. So how can we think beyond just the 4 to 5 years that we're going to be at that institution?
I can totally look this up because I don't have it off the top of my head, but I've read it, you know, 100 times. Maybe, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot, but okay. Like the conversion rate of like high school athletes to college athletes and college athletes to pro athletes.
Yeah. So I do know from high school to college that the percentage is about 7% of who goes on to play their sports in college. That could be at any level.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if
at D1, D2, D3 level, you're saying, yeah.
To junior college level, NAIA, all of the above, only 7% of high school athletes go on to like continue their sport at the next level.
And I really want to pause and like reflect on that just of, you know, how great it is if you are a college athlete, no matter if, you know, you're coming in last in every race or if you are a scholarship athlete, just the fact that you are doing it, you made it. Only 7% of high school athletes go on to be a college athlete. You know, I work with so many college athletes or high school athletes that want to run in college. And I also say that because I've learned over the years, I even started this podcast saying, well, I wasn't a, you know, I wasn't a scholarship athlete, and I was far from it, but like to still be proud of that, you know, because that is a big deal and it is something to be proud of. And the number is even smaller, of course, when we don't know the number, we can look it up, but it's, yeah, it's way smaller from college to pro.
Yeah, I believe it's around either 1% or 2%. It's very little. And
that it's going to be football and basketball that are driving that number up. And if we look at sports like softball or track, it's, you know, going to be way lower.
Yeah. And even women's soccer, thinking about like the opportunities that there are out there. But that's one of the reasons why that percentage continues to decrease. And, you know, I was in the same boat that you are. I have years have said, well, I just played at the junior college level. Like, that's what I would always tell people. And like, I had student athletes stop me and say, but you played.
But you played.
Yeah. And I was like, I did. Yeah, I did. And because they, like all college athletes understand like what it takes, no matter what level that you're at.
And it takes a lot. It does. And that's why like, I want to like say that, because I think I had to work on that myself for many years of like, wait, be proud of that. You know, like you did it. So what if you weren't on scholarship? So what if you were middle of the pack or back of the pack sometimes? Like you were there and you did it, because it was a huge commitment in time, in effort, in mental energy, and the balance. And so that's kind of why I was getting at the balance of academics and athletics, is I kind of heard you say like, look at the academics. Like, even if your goal is to play college sports, you should be really caring about the academics. You are a student athlete, and student does come first.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the questions I always would meet with recruits and with their families. And I never asked a kid, what did they want to major in? Because that didn't really define them. I always ask, what do you want to do when this sport is over? What's your passion? Because if you really think about it in that frame of mind, as you're selecting these schools, yeah, maybe the right fit for you doesn't have that dream major that you always thought about, but there's another path at that institution that is still going to get you to the end result. You just have to know to ask the right questions and talk to the right people to say, okay, is this going to be a great fit for me?
Mm-hmm. So these are all things that you help your clients navigate.
Yeah. Yes. So we will talk about like, where do we see ourselves falling on institution levels, but then also thinking about, okay, what majors do those institutions have so that they can, the students and the parents both can make the best decision possible.
When do you recommend that people start looking into colleges and start looking into the requirements?
Yeah. So it's kind of a twofold question. So with the NCAA, we want to make sure that we are registered with a certified profile account by our sophomore year of high school. Like that's when we want to be registered with the Eligibility Center, because what that allows is coaches to see, like, you're on the NCAA eligibility list, they can then add you to their college list. But then there's also an opportunity at the freshman level to say, okay, I'm going to register for a free account on the NCAA's website because this is my trajectory. This is what I'm looking towards. And when we do that, we're actually really casting a big vision of what is going to look like long-term. And that also includes, like, for students, having the conversation with your parents, having the conversation with your high school coach and your high school guidance counselor.
Mm-hmm. So by sophomore year, I definitely waited until junior year, personally.
Yeah.
That's early. I feel like it's hard to think that far in advance.
Yeah. And the reason why you want to do that, there's not a whole lot of things that are going to fall into that. But as you're like registering for that account, you're also answering some really big questions for the NCAA that go with amateurism status. So we want to make sure as we go through our high school career that we don't quote unquote turn pro by not doing specific requirements or by doing something we weren't supposed to do. And so that gives us just a little heads up of saying, okay, this is the track I'm on. I'm really following through with what I'm doing. And then by your junior year, you know, having your, always having your transcript sent every year. And the reason why doing that is because you're staying ahead of the game to know, am I missing any requirements? I have it there. So if coaches ever want to look at your transcript, they can pull that from the NCAA's website.
Mm-hmm. And is that, I want to go back to like the GPA comment a little bit too. I feel like with athletics, there's a lot of, I mean, we're all over the board because some people are like true, just like, I only care about my sport and I'm really not paying attention to academics. But then you also have the flip side, which is I'm a high achiever in everything that I do. So you mentioned like the 2.3 GPA. So if somebody in, but that's with the core classes, but if somebody had like a 3.5 to a 4, do they have anything to worry about?
They would need to worry about making sure they take classes that are on the NCAA's core course list, because every high school is different. So I've seen it where students would be high achieving students, or maybe they're, you know, have a lower end GPA. But when I look at their core courses, maybe the high school didn't update them. Maybe that student is like one of the first students from that high school to go to a collegiate level and their high school is not registered with the Eligibility Center. You know, if there's been any curriculum changes, we want the high school to make sure that they're updating all of that, because the student could get caught between a rock and a hard place, essentially thinking they're doing everything right. But as they look past it, they're actually missing some things. And so I help parents and students, okay, let's find your core course list. Let's make sure we bring that to the counselor. Is there anything that needs to be changed? Is there anything that needs to be updated so that they make sure they're on that right trajectory and on that path?
Yeah, these are all things I've been totally like in the dark about and had no clue about. I think, you know, I was just somebody who trusted that my high school was giving me what I needed, you know, but I can see how both with whether it's high schools that are more like private universities and changing their curriculum, not universities, private high schools that are changing their curriculum often or kind of doing things on their own terms, like that could get a little tricky. And also maybe even just like small towns that maybe aren't updating things as often as possible and aren't like cued into this stuff. So I can see how this does happen.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm a product of a very, very small community with, you know, we only had one high school in our whole entire county. So when you think of it, especially in our rural areas, the year I graduated, we had one student go Division I, and that was the first student in 16 years.
Wow.
So those are the things that you want to think about as, and that's why starting your sophomore year is so key, because you can start to learn, okay, did that student go Division I or did they go Division II? Because we always know some students who are going to play at the collegiate level, but we want to make sure that we're falling underneath those, the right protocol, and that the high school is keeping everything up to date. Because, you know, I mean, our high school counselors do so much. They have so many students they need to be worried about, making sure they're all on the right track. And it's just one extra little piece that you can, as a student and a parent, be your own advocate to say, this is what we're planning. How can you be involved and help us get there?
Right, right. The worst thing you want to do is not know and then not be able to follow through with your dream, right? So it's just taking, so you mentioned this NCAA eligibility list that you recommend signing up for at least by sophomore year. Is this something that people can access like for free online by themselves right now?
Yeah. So the free profile account for the ninth graders, is that something I always tell people, grab that free account. The registered certified account is around $90 for high school students, $150 for international students. However, I always like to make sure parents know this, that if your student gets a fee waiver for any standardized testing like ACT or SAT, and these parents will know that, that there is also a fee waiver for the eligibility center and their high school can help them apply for that. So I never want that fee to hold any students back simply for the fact that like, there, you know, if you get that fee waiver for ACT or SAT, you also get the fee waiver for the NCAA.
Okay. And where do they go to sign up? Is it something I can include in our show notes just in case?
Yeah, okay. I can definitely make sure that there's a link in the show notes. And it's simply like, it's not eligibility center. That's not like, I would love to say that that's the easiest way to get to it, but it's not. So we'll just include that link. And again, you can kind of peruse around and see that either, you know, that free profile account is right for you right now, or you need that certified account. And again, you go ahead and get listed in the eligibility center. And have your transcript sent over, you are one step ahead of just the whole entire game.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So that's a great first step and some great advice and great background. And then, of course, I want to re-highlight that what you do is really guiding people through that, helping coach, guide, counsel, advise, really both the student athlete and the parent on all the necessary steps and kind of monitoring their progress. Throughout, like, do you work with some clients like throughout the years too to really like,
Cool. So we could start at their 10th grade year and saying, okay, here's some of the things we need to work on, especially academically as well, because some of our students have really big dreams and passions. And sometimes that's an institution that's really difficult. And so we want these students to be academically prepared as they transition from high school to college, because, you know, as a collegiate athlete, your time is limited. You have a lot of things that are going on. And so if we can really work through the academic skills, then that transition is going to be much easier. And I always say, and you will probably hear any of my students ever say this, is that if you are got everything done academically, so you've know when that paper's due, you've been working on it, you've studied for the exam, when you walk into your athletic arena, whatever that is, you can be 100% focused in that moment to train to the best of your ability, whether it's in your watching film, weightlifting, or actual practice. You are not worried about the paper that's due at midnight because you've already worked through all these other things that you needed to accomplish to get to where you are.
Yeah. And that's so much of the transition, like between high school and college. It just is harder. The academics are harder. You're doing everything alone. You don't have a parent reminding you or forcing you to sit down and do your homework. Also, there's just so much going on. You know, college is a time to embrace social activities and do things with friends and, you know, take advantage of just everything that this university might have to offer. And so time management, prioritizing, it's all so much. What are some of the biggest challenges, Sarah, that you have seen student athletes face as a college athlete?
Yeah. And that's something I do now. I still work with some of those athletes and the college students as they make that transition. Because when we move into the collegiate level, every class is going to be different. And, you know, at high school, you kind of knew those teachers, you knew what to expect, your friends told you what to expect, but now you're at this collegiate level with all new professors. the school probably does things very differently, including the online platform. And the number one thing that I've seen that students have needed some extra support on is ensuring that they're staying up to date in everything they're doing. You know, at the collegiate level, your professor is going to give you a syllabus. They may never reference that syllabus again, and it's your responsibility. So how can you plan for the full entire semester and say, okay, now I've kind of got everything together. I know what to expect, because if you're in season, you're going to miss class. There's like no way around it. So if you already have that, all of your syllabi laid out, and you see, okay, here are my competition dates, here are the important dates in the class, you can then prioritize and organize what you need to get done and how you need to communicate with your professors.
Mm-hmm. And that's huge. Again, when I was in college and I did track, the most I ever missed was probably a Friday, because of our meets were usually on the weekends. But other sports that are doing Tuesday games or Thursday games or Tuesday and Thursday, or they're traveling midweek, you miss a lot of classes. And that's where it is all on you as a student. These teachers are not babysitting you. And some of these classes might have 200, 300, 500 people in them. So the teacher is not going to follow up with you. It's completely on you.
Yeah. And you know, and a lot of times that transition means some of those classes may be only for exams. Like that might be all your grade is based on. So how can you continue to prepare for those classes and do really well and reach your potential when the system is a little different in one class because there's four exams, the next class, maybe it's only four papers. You've got to make sure that you're doing everything in your control, again, to reach that level of academics that you're looking for.
Yeah. 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 Being a student athlete is tough.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about that.
To summarize, it's so busy. It's a lot of pressures from different angles. And oh, I'm only saying this not to scare people from it, but just to, you know, relate to the college athletes listening to this podcast right now, that it's like, yeah, it's a tough time. It's a fun time though. And, you know, I'm so glad that I did it, and it was fun and so many lessons learned. And honestly, like, I think it's truly, truly shaped me as a person with things like time management or taking personal responsibility. I mean, that extra skill set are things that other like friends, when I did have friends that weren't on the track team with me, like they just weren't as responsible. Yeah. Sorry, old friends, but they just weren't. And you see that then, like, I think that anybody, you know, again, we talk about how many college athletes go pro, and sure, it's not that many, but how many college athletes turn into just like badass, successful career mm-hmm. people. Like right. You do, because the skills you learn being a collegiate athlete, like, translate over into the real world.
Yeah. And those are the things that we always want to think about, and why we look at that bigger picture and say, what are the transferable skills that I can take away from being a student athlete? Because a lot of times our collegiate student athletes don't have the option of getting that part-time job or that major internship maybe they were looking for. But there's so many things being a student athlete allows you to accomplish as you move into the next level of life.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. So let's talk about you a little bit more. Like, what sport did you play in college?
Yeah, so I played soccer. And like I said, I played at the junior college level, and it was an incredible experience. I am not like most people. I decided my senior year that this was what I was going to do. And one of the main reasons is because I was actually on the first ever high school soccer team, women's soccer team at my high school.
Yeah, so you said you were in a very rural, small town area.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And so that just wasn't something that, you know, a lot of female athletes did. And so it was kind of like my eyes were open to it. You know, after my friend, I knew he was going to play Division I football. And I was like, wait a second, like, this is actually something I could probably do too. And, you know, jumped in late to the party, but it was an amazing experience. Unfortunately, I had a couple of major injuries that I just decided, you know what, it's probably best that I don't continue.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, what, how cool that you had that opportunity, almost an opportunity you didn't even know existed until senior year of high school. And like, wait, I can do this. And That's very cool.
Oh yeah. It was a great experience. And like you said, I mean, I learned so many lessons along the way and it truly shaped the rest of my collegiate academic career. And then also what I do professionally, because I think had I not continued down that road, I probably wouldn't have been in the position I was in for over 10 years working in collegiate athletics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, did you, when you were deciding on school too, did you kind of always think you wanted to go into academic advising or athletics? Like,
no. So I actually, my undergraduate degree is actually in early childhood education. So I was a first grade teacher, but I also coached soccer for a couple of years before I decided to go back to graduate school. And then when I was in graduate school, I learned of this really cool job of being an academic advisor for athletics. And that was kind of what set me on my path.
Yeah, I like that. No, also just, I think it's so good to highlight that because for our high school or college athletes listening, like, I think there's so much pressure to like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What's your major going to be? And like, it's okay if you don't have it fully figured out. Like, you can start somewhere, you can transition. I've had a few other guests on this podcast, another dietitian, Rashonda Thornton, who like had a completely different career for 10 years before then becoming a dietitian. And actually, my coworker, the other dietitian on my team here at Rise Up Nutrition, Jenna, she like studied meteorology before studying nutrition. And so, you know, you're always, it's okay if you don't have it figured out, like pick something, go with it, see if it works. But if it doesn't, you can always change.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And I love that so much because, you know, students will be hearing like, what do you want to major in? Like all these things. And I think you just, if you take a step back and say, okay, what am I truly passionate about right now? That will continue to be a passion of mine and my big ambition as I move forward.
Yeah. I was not necessarily passionate about nutrition in high school, but I was passionate about athletics. As I was exploring like jobs, I was like, I don't want to be a coach. I don't want to be a gym teacher. And so I really like, but I didn't have any other interests and hobbies. It was my mom that pointed out to me, like, and we joke about this now, but she pointed out to me like, well, you're really good at controlling your diet. So why don't you teach people how to do that? Which years later and reflection, it's because, well, that wasn't good what I was doing. And in fact, I tell people how not to do that now, but it was like, so I just picked that and went with it because my mom pulled it out of me. Like, why don't you do that? And so I just did go with it. But entering freshman year, I wasn't like convinced. In fact, I went to University of Massachusetts Amherst and I even thought I might transfer because it wasn't my first choice. So I went into freshman year saying, I don't know that I like this major and I might even transfer. But this is where I think I got lucky perhaps, or I picked something and I went with it, is that I did develop a passion for it. And as I learned more, it was like, yeah, I want to keep doing this, you know, and as I made friends and as I found success on the track team, yeah, I do want to stay here, you know, but you do always have options. Like you don't have to be 100% certain right away.
Oh, that's so, so true. And I'm glad that you said that. And I also want to point out, you had a really great encourager and a mentor with your mom. And that's what I always say to our students is, you know, you need to find someone that can be a sounding board for you, someone that you can talk through these ideas and really look at it. And that might be an academic coach, that might be your parents or your family, or that might actually be the academic advisor that you're working with through your collegiate career.
Or an athletic coach even. I think that sometimes other people are good at pointing out your strengths than yourself. Like that's, you know, we have trouble finding our own strengths. We're really good at finding our own weaknesses. Yeah. But so when other people can point that out to you, like that's really meaningful of, oh, okay, this is something, if somebody else thinks I'm good at this and I actually am, and you know, to grasp that goes for everything in life, not just choosing a major in college.
Right. 100%.
Yeah. Well, and you know, just this has been so helpful, Sarah. And I just love this conversation and where you and I connected, because this is a female athlete nutrition podcast. So I know we haven't really talked nutrition, but you and I connected just because of, you know, I work with collegiate athletes with their nutrition and you work more on that academic side. And it's like, there's so much going on for a collegiate athlete, as we already said, and there's so many different pieces of the puzzle. And so getting help in any one of these areas is important. You know, you want to make sure that you are, you know, listening to your coach. You want to make sure that you are engaging in social activities. You want to make sure that you are paying attention to your academics and setting a plan for that. You want to make sure that you are taking care of your body with the right nutrition. You want to make sure that you are spending time or seeking help for mental health. Like those, I don't know, those are five areas I just thought of. Can you think of any others of all the areas student athletes have to pay attention?
Yeah. The only other thing I think of is now from a strength and conditioning perspective too, you know, are you training the right way, doing the right thing for your body? But then as we move into a different time with name, image, and likeness, you know, what are you doing to brand yourself? What does your social media look like? So there's all of these things that you're totally right. These different aspects. And that's exactly how we connected is because I truly believe that, you know, a student athlete as the whole person, what can we do to help them be the most successful that they can be?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this might be changing topics a little bit, but you just like a light bulb went off in my head. Do you have any advice for how high schoolers and college athletes should screen or clean up their social media accounts? Is that something that coaches and academics are looking at?
Yes. Yes. Every time I met with a recruit, no matter what institution I was at, I always Googled their Instagram and Twitter handles to see, number one, I was doing that for myself to just find out some common ground with that student so that we could start a conversation to find out what their goals were. But coaches look at those because they want to see what kind of person you are. And so for the student athletes listening that are high school or even college level, you know, you want to make sure that your social media accounts, whether it's, you know, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, that they all represent who you are and who you represent, whether it's your school, you know. And I always say the same thing to those students. You need to be looking at the coaches' accounts, the other teammates that you could potentially play with, you know, because that's another way to find out, are you the right fit? Is that the place that you need to be going when you think about that institution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice. Wow. Yeah. Cause that's a big deal. And like as social media has been morphing over the last 10 years, right? So it's like, you know, at first, even 10 years ago when it was first coming out, like a lot of student athletes didn't think that it was being looked at. You know,
right.
It was like, no, this is my thing. This is private. This is social. And then next thing you know, they're getting kicked off a team for having a picture with a red solo cup, you know? So, but I think that the generation right now is, I think, wise on that, honestly, because they've grown up with social media. So they're actually a bit wiser about it than we were when we were first starting to use it. But it's always something good to remember is that this is a reflection of who, you know, who you are and who you want to put out into the world.
That's exactly right. And I even say to you, you know, parents are going to have that conversation with coaches. And so, you know, parents who are listening, like, make sure you're sitting down and having that conversation with your student, because you want to be very aware of what they're putting out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, Sarah, I just love this conversation. Thank you so much for helping our listeners. And I will be sure to include like your links. If people are like, oh my gosh, I need help with this, I definitely want them to get in contact with you. You're such a great resource and so wonderful at what you do. So again, your website is sidelineconfessions.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And your Instagram handle is what?
@sidelineconfessions.
At Sideline Confession. I love that name.
Thank you.
Sideline Confession. It's cute. I love it. So Sarah, I usually wrap up this podcast with some rapid fire questions. Oh, are you up for it?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. If there was one food that you could eat every single day for the rest of your life, but never get sick of it, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. It's totally pizza.
I know. That's it. Oh yeah. I love pizza.
Yeah.
Would you stick to one flavor though?
No, I don't think so. I think I would change it up.
Yeah. There's so many different types of pizza.
That's right. So, yeah.
But I'm like a classic cheese girl though. Like I just, you know, it's such a default. It's always going to be good.
Yeah.
To me at least.
Oh, I enjoy a good cheese pizza.
Yeah. Amazing. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
Favorite sport to participate is probably soccer.
Yeah. Do you still get to play recreationally or?
Not necessarily. Sometimes if I'm like coaching a kids camp or something like that, I'll throw on my cleats and, you know, go out and mess around a little bit, but nothing that's too recreationally.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another reason that you and me are so passionate about helping high schoolers and college athletes, because there's some things that you just don't do as much as an adult. Like I used to be a pole vaulter. I just don't do that anymore.
Right.
There are recreational soccer leagues. There are recreational track clubs that I could keep pole vaulting, but like embrace it while you can. If you love that sport,
that's right.
Do it as long as you can. That's awesome. What about as a spectator? Do you have a favorite spectator sport?
Oh, that's a great one. I would say this is probably going to be a surprise to a lot of people, but probably my favorite spectator sport to watch is actually college wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was just because I was as an academic advisor for, you know, a wrestling team for a few years, and it's very intriguing and it's so exciting.
And sadly, very few schools have it, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
So that's another thing. Wrestling and gymnastics, especially men's gymnastics, but it's like so few universities have it that when you get to witness it, watch it, it's something really special.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Last question. Is there a female athlete that really inspires you? This can be somebody, you know, professional and famous, or someone in your personal life, a female athlete that inspires you, and why?
Yeah. Okay. So, well, there's so many things that are running through my brain to answer this question, but one of the things that I always share with people is because of the 96 and 99 U.S. women's soccer team, they are one of the reasons why I got to play my sport. They're one of the reasons why soccer actually became a thing where I was growing up, which has put me on my trajectory of life. So those teams are probably the most inspiring to me because that was at a really pivotal point in my life athletically.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I remember that team too. You and me are around the same age. So they were super inspiring. I love that. Well, wonderful, Sarah. Thank you so much again for joining us, and just really appreciate your time and everything that you're doing to help student athletes.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode, and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/Red S and download the Red S recovery race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by, and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/reds. That's /REDS. And you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.